Good morning on a lovely summer's day. I'm going to continue to be talking about the love of God. That is probably one of my major themes. I think the statement that's in 1 John chapter 4 twice, that God is love, needs to be taken as literally and seriously as any statement in the Bible. You could go a long way into developing what that means, what the consequences are. So we could say, well, if something is of love, is it of God? Conversely, if something is not of love, is it of God? We look at all the prejudice and anger and discrimination and judgment, judgmentalism, and the things that we try to foist onto God, that God just may not be where we think God is. And I'm talking about the three dimensions of the nature of the love of God, three bases, as it were, using the analogy of a baseball diamond, first base, second base, third base. In order to love as Jesus loves, which is the goal of Christian life, to truly be able to love one another as Jesus loved us, which is his great commandment in John's Gospel, John 14, 15. He says it more than once. There are things you need to do prior to that. You cannot get love where there is no love any more than blood from a stone. First base is receiving. In the beginning, we need to receive the love of God, and that's what I'm talking about. I'm going to finish this little section on barriers to receiving the love of God, with the things that block us. The next section would be on sharing. That's the second base. And there's a sacrament to each of these. First base is baptism. Second base is the Lord's Supper, or the Eucharist, where we share in this love with others with which we have received, beginning with sharing with the Lord, the Lord's own body and blood, the Lord's own life, his own love. Third base, as we will see, is giving. And the sacrament that's really a sacrament, and I will, when we talk about that, I will attempt to justify and explain it to you, is foot washing, which Jesus commands all of us as disciples to do. And if he did it, he says, is the servant above the master, and I do this, you need to do it too. So we're talking about now this empowerment of receiving, just pure and simple receiving love. And I've been talking about the barriers or the difficulties that we have to receiving love. I've had numerous conversations over the years with people, both in my parish and places I have given renewal events, where I've spoken on these three aspects of the love of God. And there seems to be pretty darn good agreement that it's really difficult to receive love. Do you have difficulty feeling loved, receiving love? Just simply letting yourself be loved. For who you are, not for what you do. Can you believe in the possibility that God might love you unconditionally? God might have created you to be you and already loves you. Well, let's look for a little bit now at the barriers. I said that there are 10 primary barriers, things that prevent us from receiving God's love, or actually letting God's love in. Numerous people over the years have said, well, I can believe, pointing to their head, I can believe God loves me here, but I don't know how to transfer it down into my heart, about another foot down. Can't do it. I could also call these barriers hurdles. Why? Because all of these, every one of these 10, are hurdles we place between ourselves and God. And what do you do with a hurdle? I'm an old track guy, shot put and discus, and I used to enjoy watching track and hurdlers, you know. But you got three options. You could jump over a hurdle, you could push it down and jump through it, or you could simply walk around it. So these hurdles are things we put. They may be very real, but they're really elements in us. And the first was, this is what I've said here previously, doubt that God exists. Okay, that we talked about that. Second, doubt that God knows or cares for you. You can be what's called a deist. And many of our founding fathers in this country were deists. They believed that God created, and then like a watchmaker, when God had completed creation, put his watch down and walked away. So God created us, but God doesn't know about us. God doesn't care about us. That's kind of a scary thought, but that's another whole attitude, a realm of discourse on who God may or may not be. Third was, we talked about last time, and I'll pick it up here again, was indifference or lack of belief in love. We can be burned in life and in love and cease to believe in love, whether hopefully only temporary while we're healing, or for some become bitter and close doors and not let people in. Go along and act like everything's fine, but deep down, not really believing in love. And I told you last time the story of when I was embittered in my 20s. One of the things I decided was that I believed, actually capable of loving someone for who he or she was. And therefore, if I was capable of loving, then I couldn't be the only dude on the planet who was capable of loving. And that actually helped me. That made sense. So that was the little crack in the door between myself and humanity. And then there's what seems to be indifference to love. You know, I said that indifference is really more the opposite of love than hate. When there's hate, there can still be connection, anger, so forth. So when I've done marriage counseling, if one or the other couple is indifferent, that's in many ways worse than anger. Because anger, there's connection, and hopefully the things that can be walked through, worked through, resolved. But indifference is not always easy to resolve. Moving away. God hates lukewarmness or indifference. And I think most all of us do in love relationships. For heaven's sakes, be hot or cold. That's what God said in Revelation 3. I'd rather have you hot or cold, but what? Lukewarm? Yuck. He said, I spit you out of my mouth. Sometimes, of course, apparent indifference really means to have shut down. So I have worked with people where one of, or both, but one of the spouses says, well, because it comes down to, you know, at some point with the first or tenth session, do you love me? That's the issue. And the indifference is, well, I don't know. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's gone, because we do have a point of no return where we don't want to go back. We've made the decision. The house is burned down. I'm not going to go back and try to rebuild the relationship for whatever reason, whether it's justified or premature. But indifference sometimes masks woundedness, and it's better to feel nothing than to feel pain. Do you agree? Yeah. Sometimes people drug themselves and do whatever to get to a state of indifference, meaning not feeling the pain that they feel. And hardness of heart, which is also an abomination to God, to have a hardened heart. God promises in Ezekiel to give us new hearts. Take out our hardened hearts and give us hearts of flesh so we can feel again, love again. And if any of you happen to have hardened hearts or know someone who does, that's a great prayer to pray, that we get new hearts, rejuvenated hearts. But God, and through the prophet Ezekiel, says hearts of flesh. I love that. Remember, as a child, you had a heart of flesh. We felt, as children, things. We need to overcome the indifference. I'll come back to that in a different context shortly. Fourth, sort of applies to God, an absence of the desire for God. I remember times in my life when I don't think I had a desire for God, especially as a young man. You know, gosh, my life was full with school, of course, but then buddies, developing relationships, getting an identity among a group. Hey, am I going to be cool? Am I going to be one of the guys? Academics, sports were terribly important to me. And yes, girls. So life is pretty fun. I didn't have any space for God. I did go off and on to church, but that was not a good experience. And I eventually left church when I didn't feel the pastor appreciated me. And I'll come back to that later in another context. Yeah, maybe like some of you, I didn't have the best church experience growing up. But I threw the baby out with the wash when I walked out of the church, which I eventually came back, of course, as have many. What's it like to desire God? What's it like not to desire God? I remember a year or so ago, a conversation with a very bright atheist. I may have mentioned this before. If I have, forgive me. And he once again brought up the fact, he said, Hal, he's a very bright man. I just don't believe there's God. He knows about who I am, and we're friends, but we get on the religious subject. Uh-oh. And I said, one question. I said, do you want there to be a God? And he looked at me, nonplussed. He had no answer. And that's the last time we've talked about God. Sometimes that is the real question. Do you want there to be a God? Or maybe we want to be God. That is to say, we want to be autonomous, autonomous, self-law. We want to be on our own. But the timing is everything in this apparent absence of the desire for God. It's been said, I think it's very true, that we pick other things to desire as kind of God substitutes. Money. Do you think money is God here? It sure seems to rule. Wow. What else? Desire. We desire pleasure. We desire plenty. Material possession. Prestige. To be respected. Power. Some of us are power hungry. The philosopher Nietzsche, at the end of the 19th, early part of the 20th century, his whole thing was the will to power. And he was one of the philosophers. He didn't like it. He would not have endorsed it. But nevertheless, this idea of will to power was picked up by the Nazis. Yeah, we have will to power. So maybe it is true that Lord Acton said power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So maybe we would desire power. But we don't desire God. Then let me read Psalm 63, one of David's psalms. David, who clearly desired God. David, who was the only person ever said, where it was said about in the Bible, that he was a man after God's own heart. His heart must have been right where God wanted him to be. Can you imagine, as I read these words, and this is from the RSV, I picked it up this morning, and it's got the thou and dart, but art, but I like that. O God, thou art my God, I seek thee. My soul thirsts for thee as in a dry and weary land where no water is. So I have looked upon thee in the sanctuary, beholding thy power and glory, because thy love, my steadfast love, is better than life. My lips will praise thee, so I will bless thee as long as I live. And so he goes on. My soul clings to thee, thy right hand oppose me. Well, I remember when I finally broke through and began to desire God. Well, what did I desire when I desired God? Isn't that a good question? What do you desire? Assurance that there is a meaning to life. Maybe healing, in my case, healing. Comfort. Comfort means strengthen as well as feel better. I can do all things through him who strengthens me, Paul says. So seeking God could be seeking God for assurance that there is God, that there's a possibility of heaven and afterlife, that God is in charge here, that all will be well eternally. That's a great one. All will be well eternally, which Jesus assures us in John 14. For me, the absolute, utter desire is for God. I can't explain that. But I'm going to try to say more right after our break. And we're back. Okay, I was raised a question that has kind of fascinated me over the years, as have many questions. I love to raise questions and then see if you answer them, is what does it mean to desire God? What exactly, you know, we can be desiring God's benefits, health, wealth, well-being for us and our loved ones, all these kinds of great things. But what does it mean to actually desire God? Well, let me give you a hint. The greatest philosopher, pagan philosopher, of all time was Plato. 4th century Greece. And Plato had this vision of there being a God beyond all image. But he said if you take truth, you know, the ultimate truth, and just do a projection here, just all the way to the ultimate truth, a trajectory, and then you take goodness, ultimate goodness, where that takes you, and beauty, the most possible beautiful thing. At the juncture, at the ultimate of all three of those, even above that, is God. I like that. And so, there have been times when God drew near in my life and I knew the truth. That the ultimate truth was not, oh what, not a series of propositions or mathematical formula, but God is the truth. And beauty. And I am a lover of beauty. I've gotten into flowers this year and taking pictures of flowers all over and all that stuff, recognizing the beauty, the gentleness, beauty. Sometimes we need beauty when the world can be so ugly, and painful, and cruel. You know, for me, that's also classical music, Sound of Heaven. And the good, to see the goodness in human hearts, and those, for example, who have responded to recent tragedies and reached out, goodness. When you seek the ultimate goodness, when you seek the ultimate truth, when you seek the ultimate beauty, and to have that shine upon you and touch you and affect you and give you a new kind of a sense that all is well, you're seeking God. Well, okay, so that barrier is resolved. Now, fifth, I got to hopefully get through these today, is the sense that you've not earned God's love. Oh, dear, dear, dear. That's true for most of us. Don't you want to earn what you get? Feel that you've somehow deserved it? We don't know what to do with a gift for many of us, especially this sheer gift of love. Is it for real? I haven't earned it. Can I count on it? What does it mean for us and to us? I think most of us would prefer to earn whatever we get, so no one can demand that we return it later. That's like, you know, getting diplomas. It's just past the season of getting degrees, and I've got a few, and I can look at them and realize nobody can take that from me. I earned that. I earned that. It certainly has a more powerful ring then, I need that, or I want that. Well, you can't earn a gift of love, because in our ability to accept gifts really lies our ability to receive this sheer gift of God's love. As I wrote once regarding giving and receiving gifts, a true gift is one which does not have to be given. If you must, then don't call it a gift, call it a purchase. Do not demand gifts. When you pressure, you deny your need to be given and the giver the need to express love. Many seek to be worthy before receiving, but who is worthy of the gift of life? What in life waits to be praiseworthy before receiving? And is not need worth itself? Others would give, but only if they may give also. Yet what do they accept but obligation? They would turn spontaneity into ritual and giving into agreement. Those who cannot accept gifts cannot accept love. Related to that is the sense that we are unworthy. You know, I haven't earned it, but I'm just, oh, who am I? I'm unworthy. And I've used the analogy, those of you who have children, for example, what if, you know, tomorrow your child or one of your children, whatever, would come and say, you know, Dad or Mom, I really am not worth, I'm not worthy. I'm not worth your love, so I'm going to not let you love me anymore. What would you say? What do you mean you're not worthy? Well, I'm not good enough, so I'm not going to let you love me. Don't say that. It is my love for you that is your worth to me. Love grants worth. Let me love you. It's back to this gift status. And then next, so that's six, that you're finally going to have to recognize that the God's love for you is what grants you worth. Seven is unforgiveness, oh boy, and guilt from the past. Unforgiveness is a black hole in the heart which refuses to let light and love in. It's been called, guilt has been called, justly the gift that keeps on giving. Where there is unforgiveness, there's an inability to receive or accept love. Like internal organs rejecting the incoming blood which feeds and cleanses. So who haven't you forgiven? Yourself? Others? And for what? For what are you still punishing yourself? Many or even most of us have unforgiveness somewhere in our memory and hearts. I've worked a lot with helping people to forgive themselves and others. To resolve it, we have to turn to the one who can forgive us and came in order to bear the cost of our misdeeds and those done against us. Let me tell you a story. Back when I was doing a lot of healing prayer back in the 80s in Des Moines, a group brought, I was an associate at First Methodist Church, and a group of, brought a pastor's wife, we'll call her Claire, in who had cancer. And there were probably 15 or 20 of us, because she was a wonderful, saintly woman. And we prayed for her, laid hands on her, and had a prayer service. And I got a word of the Lord. I can't explain it right now. I'll talk about it another time. Anyway, certain these words, and I can't ever forget it, hit me, and I didn't want to say it. But it kept coming back, you know, back until I finally realized, okay, I got to say it. And I said, Claire, I've got a word of the Lord. And I tried to put a positive spin on it. And the word was, it will not be this that will get you. It will not be this that will get you. I knew immediately, but I didn't tell her. You're going to die, kid, but it's not going to be the cancer. Something else is going to block it, block your healing. Okay, so we had healing services off and on for a period of months. Even miracles happened. Great, but she did not get any better. And I became her pastor over this time, wife of another pastor. And it was a week before she died. I was visiting her. She was bedridden at this time. And then she said, Hal, there's just something I have to tell you. I've carried it, and I can't carry it anymore. Call it my deathbed confession. I said, oh, okay, Claire. It turned out that some years before, her husband had had an affair. And out of anger, she had a brief affair as a payback. And then all the bells and whistles were off inside me. And I said, oh, Claire, did you ever forgive yourself for what you've done? Had done. She said no. There it was. Her inability to forgive herself, her unforgiveness blocked God's Spirit from healing her. Wow. We'll come back to that in another context in a minute. Eight is the fear of what God might ask you to do. This is, can be a significant fear for some. I've known people who are afraid, oh, if I get too near to God, God's going to want to send me to, you know, be a missionary in Africa or whatever. And my comment is, God will only ask you to do what is truly in your heart. That is to say, this is the meaning of the word for vocare, vocation in the Latin, means calling, that God places in our hearts what God truly wants of us, to love one another, certainly, and then gifts of ministry, gifts of leadership, whatever it is. And so our deepest desire, we'll find out, is to serve God and to give ourselves in love. 9, fear of what God might ask you to give up. Oh, I know people are afraid of that. Like one of those poignant moments in the Gospels is when Jesus asks a young man, rich man, to give up everything and follow him. He can't do that. No wonder Jesus says, you got to enter by the narrow door. Now this young leader is told, if you follow me, there'll be all kinds of rewards on the other side, but you've got to come forward to be with me. Give up your love of the world. Do not be divided in heart. Do not be divided. Give up. Purity of heart is to will one thing. You know, you can't serve two masters, God and mammon. People still try to do that. And so I can't even believe what I'm saying, but there are pastors who are multi-millionaires who think that's what God wants, is for you to be a millionaire, and that there isn't a problem between this world and its values and the kingdom. The kingdom's all about love. And finally, because I could spend a time or two yet here, last are unhealed wounds of heart and history. This is a big, vast subject, and it's where I'm going to begin next time. Healing the wounds of the soul and the spirit in order to be able to truly receive purely, simply like a child, the love of God. And that's why Jesus says, you got to be like children to enter the kingdom, because children are not going to refuse love unless they're wounded. Okay, there are 4 kinds of healing. I'll just mention, and I'm going to know we got to go. Healing of body, this physical healing. Spiritual healing, healing of relationships around forgiveness, both forgiving yourself for your own sins of commission and omission, and accepting being able to forgive others. Then this psychological healing, that's the inner healing we'll spend time talking about, of the wounds, the things that people have done to us. And finally, there's the issue of deliverance in the demonic, which is all about the loss of freedom. So it becomes very difficult for us to choose God and to be open to receive the love of God. So next time, I'm going to start right here with these kinds of healing. If you would like to hear this show again, it'll be on my website, drhalgreen.com, drhalgreen.com, which right now, by the way, is being restructured so you can't enter it. Sorry about that. Hopefully sometime next week they'll be finished and will be a go. But you can write me, drhalgreen@gmail, drhalgreen@gmail.com. Please, any questions, anything you'd like me to talk about God. And in the meantime, my friends, be open to this wondrous love of God and the beauty of nature. Blessings.